You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Same Old Arsenal therapy session. Today, I am joined by three wonderful co-host guests, friends, and we are going to relive what went on yesterday, hopefully get some context, and with a little bit of time behind us, maybe we can all be smiling towards the end of it, because come 6:30 yesterday, I don't know about you guys in the chat, please tell me how you're feeling at 6:30 yesterday, but I was not in the mood to be introspective and happy and yeah, but look at the context of the season. I was very much in the doldrums. And so what I'm hoping for today is the same old Arsenal therapy session. And to do that, I have the wonderful Amanda, as always. You all right?
I'm all right.
I need a bit more than that. Come on.
I'm a little bit like a teenager that's having a strop. I normally can get over it the next morning, but I feel like I'm fighting fires with idiot Arsenal fans, idiot rival fans, people I'm working with. It has just been constant. And, you know, I feel like I'm like Mama Bear trying to protect her cubs. I'm just constantly, if anyone says crumble or bottle to me anymore, I'm literally losing my rag. And I'm very tired and very disappointed. But apart from that...
Yeah, well, you're allowed to be. You're allowed to be. You're allowed to be. Because, you know, it wasn't the best of fun yesterday. Let's get Mr. Cookie to say hello. Say hello, Captain.
Hello. Do you need more from me or is that okay?
Yeah, just a little bit more, if that's all right.
Yeah, no, I'm good, mate. I'm good. I'm looking forward to tonight. I'll be honest, this season has exhausted me. And last night, I just felt absolutely knackered. It's hard to believe we've still got another two games of this to go. Like, it felt very end of the season yesterday. And I know it's not, but I am just so mentally drained from this season. But yeah, I'm looking forward to chatting it through with you wonderful people, as always.
Yeah, me too. Me too. That sort of group therapy session, catharsis. We love to do it with a guest every once in a while. And today's guest is the fabulous FK, who runs the Latte Firm podcast. Go there and subscribe and watch it. It is very, very good. I don't get the time to watch lots of different or listen to lots of different podcasts. I do listen to the Latte Firm one because you will learn very interesting stuff. So FK, thanks for coming on the show, mate.
Thank you for having me. It's really nice to be here. And a warm welcome to Amanda and James. I haven't seen you guys in ages. So thank you so much. And thanks for all the kind chat in the viewers. It feels weird sitting on the other side of the fence for once. I'm normally hosting, but this is lovely. I'm really excited.
Yeah, good, man. Good. Right. We're going to kick off with, I was just talking about this beforehand, before we went live. James, you joined us just as we were about to go live. So I'm going to let you go last. But hangover cures. So when you've had an absolute skinful, every single person has a different type of hangover cure. So I want people in the chat to tell us, what's your football hangover cure after what was a horror show yesterday? So how do you take on what has happened when there's a big defeat like that yesterday? I'm going to kick off with, I'm going to start, but then I'm going to go to FK and then Amanda and then James. So my personal football hangover cure is complete radio silence. So when I got home, my wife came into the kitchen and she said, do you want to talk about it? And I was like, no. And she knew. She was like, okay, that's fine. So I spent the rest of the evening watching a program called Alone. It's like a Sky History program. It was like, football doesn't exist. And in the morning, I wrote my blog, but football after that didn't exist. So FK, just to balance the contrast out from what we were talking about before, what was your football hangover from getting over what was a very bad result yesterday?
Weirdly, I have to immerse myself in it all again. I'm a real sucker for pain. So, for example, yesterday, I've obviously come home for the latte film. I do a post-match phone-in and stuff. But after that, I've got to watch the game. I've got to dive straight into all the tweets. I want to check my timeline. I want to talk to people. I want to read all the messages and all the pelters that you get on WhatsApp. So it's really weird. Like, it's I kind of just sort of, you know, cut the wound open even more. But it kind of helps me get over it. And then by the next morning, I've forgotten about it. So yesterday was particularly painful and reliving it all was particularly sort of, you know, heartbreaking given what we've done this season. But that's how I cope with it, man. I just got to dive straight in.
Well, that's fair enough. That's a different way. I think for me, like, what was it? Legolas once said when he thought Gandalf was dead, the pain is still too dear. That's how I kind of react to it. But Amanda, what is your football hangover cure straight after kickoff?
Well, straight after kickoff, I have to come home with my other half and my cousin, who I insist on listening to Talk Sport. Can you imagine how upsetting? I hate listening to it anyway. I felt like it was like a dagger in my heart. That, you know, the people on the night enjoying our demise. You know, I don't know who it was talking last night. One guy tried to stand up for us. Can't remember his name. Carl will tell us. And I had to listen to that all the way home. I can't stand it. I normally try and put some real positiveness on Twitter or Facebook or, you know, because I normally can, you know, the benefits, the wonderful season, all that. I couldn't last night. I was fuming. I was disappointed. I was angry. I was upset. I was just everything. I was also very, very tired. And I think that added to it. And I sort of honestly went for anyone that went for me, where normally I don't bother. It's quite funny when people go for me, but I just think that I'm very protective of the Arsenal at the moment because it has been incredible. And although I'm disappointed and angry, I can't really do it all day. I've not got rid of that. So when I got home, I think I just went on social media and just sort of protected the boys and a lot of Man City mates. Some were good, some weren't very good. And, you know, they're so cocky, it's censure, and they just don't get the fact we think and everybody else thinks that they buy the league. They say, well, you've spent more than us this year, and you go, stop being ridiculous. Over the years, you just buy what you want when you want. And I think that I just face it head on, although last night I insisted I'm not watching Match of the Day, I don't want to see it. So I haven't seen it. I ranted a bit, sort of like, obviously, Carl was with me, so we're sort of like, you know, he's trying to calm me down, but I was quite angry last night. And thank the Lord I didn't do a podcast, because I actually think I'd have been taken off air. I was that disappointed. And just, you know, just the whole, I just didn't envisage it. Brighton are a brilliant side. We know that. They keep beating us. We know that at the Emirates. But I really thought we were going to win. I did not have that sort of fear. I thought Everton beating City beating Everton was going to spur us on. If anything, it was the opposite. So for me, I don't really have a hangover cue because this year we've not really needed it that much. City, I expected to lose, so I didn't. I just didn't expect it last night. So just face it head on, really.
Nice. So we've got somebody who completely goes blackout. We've got somebody who just absorbs everything like a sponge, and somebody who shouts at the walls. I like it. James, can you just before we start cracking on into the game and some of the talking points within it, give us your kind of football hangover.
I'm probably a mixture of all three, to be honest, in that as soon as I get out of the stadium, I'm already thinking about, you know, what people are saying on social media, and I'll go straight onto YouTube as soon as someone's uploaded something and just absorb it, you know, whether I like that person or not. I just take the opinion in just because I want to feel some kind of therapy and just that sense of, oh, okay, I'm not the only one feeling like this. So I'll be straight onto YouTube listening to that sort of stuff. And just as I get home, I'm starting to get over the results and feeling a little bit better about things. But I'll put my key in the front door, open it up, walk into the kitchen. And if you're someone like me and still lives at home with your parents, you'll get your non-football associated mother walk into the room. Oh, they didn't win, did they? Just brings it crashing back down to earth. And I'm sure, I don't know if it's like this for you guys, but when a non-football person talks to you about football, it's just, oh, it's just soul crushing. It's so frustrating. So yeah, I blacked out for a little bit last night and, you know, watched a bit of telly and then Match of the Day advert comes up. And again, it's just like a dagger in the heart. But then again today, you know, in terms of getting over the actual hangover, as it were, I'll just try and consume, you know, all the good Arsenal content. So FK, I was listening to your fine self earlier, that little piece you put up. I'll listen to various other Arsenal podcasts and just get that sense of, yeah, we're all in this together. There's still a lot to be positive about, but I think we'll get onto it later. But in isolation, that result yesterday and that performance was just so underwhelming.
It really was, wasn't it? So let's get into it. Let's rip the Band-Aid off, FK. We're going to start with you. Talk to me about feelings going into the game. And then let's also talk about lineup as well. Let's kill two birds with one stone here. So lineup was Ramsdale, Tierney, White, Gabriel, Saka, Odegaard, Gabriel Jesus, Martinelli, Kiwior, Jorginho and Granit Xhaka. I'm not doing that in obviously the standard order. That's the order in which the numbers appear. But yeah, thoughts, FK?
Look, going into the game, I was a bit resigned, even though we'd beaten Newcastle, beaten Chelsea. It was that run towards the end of April that's really sort of thrown us off. You know, the Liverpool game where we conceded late, the West Ham, the Southampton draws. So I think we were just clinging on to like slim hope of winning this league title. And I think I went into yesterday's game, obviously massively flat, because I woke up in the morning convincing myself that Everton were going to get something against Man City. Yeah. And obviously, Everton have just been wiped aside. Like, City did not even have to break sweat. Gundogan, Haaland, unreal. They've just brushed them aside. And it was such a convincing performance and obviously sort of just made me feel so sad that I've gone into the Emirates feeling really flat. And all I asked was that the team just put on a good performance, try and somehow beat Brighton and just keep pushing until potentially the last day of the season. You know, just keep pushing City as far as we can go. And when the lineup was announced, I was pleased to see Jorginho and Xhaka play as a two. So 4-2-3-1, it felt like. I feel Thomas Partey's been magnificent for most of the season, but he's been asleep for a few weeks now. So I was a bit anxious that midfield-wise, because they press so well and they're so organised, that they would dominate. I mean, they did, to be fair, in the end, but it was a flat performance from us. But in terms of lineup, I couldn't really fault it. I mean, Jakub Kivior's done all right, so pleased to see him in the lineup. Ben White looked a bit tired, but he's really our only right back option. Gabriel's been a colossal for us all season. Kieran Tierney, I mean, there were rumours that maybe Sinchenko would be fit before the game, but of course he didn't make it. And as soon as Kieran Tierney comes in, you kind of realise, right, we're not going to control the game today. It's going to be more, Tierney's going to be the more orthodox left back. And I was a bit anxious about how he'd partner up with Martinelli because they've had some issues. Martinelli gets injured, Trossard comes on, and it was just a really flat game. I know we'll talk about that, Chris, but yeah, I mean, you asked for my sort of feeling. I felt really sort of flat. And listen, as a human being, if that's how I felt watching the game, I said on the show yesterday, or my little sort of reaction yesterday, Cookie, that the young players that we have in this squad, they're also human beings. They would have been tuning in. They might have caught the result. They would have received messages from friends and family. Mikel might have spoken about it in the changing room. And if us as fans went in and we couldn't really control our emotions, we didn't really get up for the game, then imagine how difficult it must have been for them. So just a terrible day at the office. Didn't go the way that we wanted, but that's kind of how I felt going into it. And the timing of the City game really did it for me. Like, it just killed any optimism that I had.
Yeah. Amanda, did you think that there was that flatness when you were in the ground?
Not at the beginning, no. I felt flat. I was like, FK, I was convinced. I kept my Everton mates, people have been on this podcast, Toffee TV. I was constant every day, you know, you're going to do this, believe. You're just beating Brighton. I think beating Brighton's probably hindered us, really, because Brighton came out and attacked us. And I think Everton thought maybe they'll get a point. However, I was like FK. I was in the car listening to the Emirates. They go 1-0 up. Then they literally go 2-0 up. And then I'm going, no point listening anymore. That's it for me. And I felt flat, walked in the ground, then saw it was 3-0 on the TV. And I was like, oh, okay, right. We've just got to win. So I was flat, but up for it. And I thought the crowd were great. Everyone sung North London Forever. Didn't see as many empty seats as I was expecting because of what's been going on there. I thought the singing was really good up to a point. But the first half, I felt it was quite even. I thought we were okay. Second half is just, we've got to talk about that later, it's just nothing. But I didn't hear a flatness, if you know what I mean. I felt there was a good atmosphere to begin. We were all there, weren't we? All in different parts of the ground. I may stand up and we don't stop singing up there now. It's fantastic. It never used to be like that, but it's constant. And I felt really up for it. And I thought, okay, well, you know what? We just got to run them to the end. They've got to play Brentford. They've got to play Chelsea. You know, you keep doing all this all the time. It's constant. Like, well, they could lose it here. They could drop a point there. But I did say weeks and weeks ago, I couldn't see him dropping a point. I just couldn't see it. And unfortunately, I've gone like a train. And I don't know what happened, Chris. I can't. It's like, in a way, that they're one team one week. Look at Newcastle. We were outstanding, as were the away fans that we raved about. How have we gone from that to this? I don't know.
Well, I think situations dictate and game state dictates different types of football matches. This was the Everton Brighton game. Brighton basically got sucker punched by Everton repeatedly. That's what happened. And at home, at the Emirates, we're not going to do that. We're actually more likely to hit them on transition, I would have thought, at the Amex, which maybe explains why we performed so well at the Amex, but we didn't, because the onus was on us. At the Emirates, the onus is on us. We're the ones still trying to fight for a title. We're the ones that are supposedly in form. You know, this season we've won 25 football matches out of the 35 that we've played. Like, we are the team that should be, you know, going there and dictating. And there's an expectation. And Brighton didn't have that expectation, but they did have a game plan. And I think they adopted that game plan superbly. We've got to hold our hands up and say, Brighton were superb yesterday.
Oh, they were. What a team. I love Brighton, to be honest. Apart from the dirty antics, as a club and what they do and what they produce. I mean, Trossard and Ben White, just for starters. I just think it's an amazing story and I hope they get into Europe. Absolutely. However, we need to discuss the referee, which I'm sure we'll come to.
Yeah, we will. We'll come to it in a bit. But Mr. Cook, for the first half, I wanted to get onto that first half and the setup. For me, there's two things I wanted to highlight, and I just want to get your view on it. So the first one was, I felt like in the first half, how passing was slightly wayward. There was moments with Tierney, Xhaka, Saka and Ødegaard all just misplacing slight balls in the middle of the pitch. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that. But the second thing as well, which I think was a pivotal change in the match, was they swapped Mitoma from the right-hand side to the left-hand side within about 10, 15 minutes, I think. So just want to get your thoughts on that and how much of an impact that had ultimately on the game.
So starting on your second point, the Mitoma one was really pivotal because I thought he had a field day against Ben White. I love the guy, really, but it wasn't just Mitoma that was so good against him. They just targeted that whole right-hand side. And Ben White, I thought, as much as I love him, he had a really, really poor game. But every single one-on-one, Mitoma won. And he just shows why he's proved to be such an excellent acquisition for Brighton. I'm sure, you know, he could be one of those players that goes with big, big money in the summer. But I just felt the whole game, from our perspective in that first half, and well, for the second half as well, was just so disjointed. And maybe that's down to the injuries. It probably was, when you consider we had Tierney coming in for Zinchenko, which I think, you know, we've spoken a lot about how good Tierney is and how much we wanted to see more of him this season. But I think we saw exactly why he's not been in the team yesterday, because it did hinder us so much. And then then, of course, you've got Kivior playing at centre-half, who, OK, has been good recently, but again, it's not your first choice. Then you've got Jorginho in for Partey, who, again, has been good, but over the course of the season, Partey's the guy you want there. And then, of course, I think the pivotal moment as well, along with Matoma switching flanks, was Martinelli going off and Trossard coming on. I thought Trossard had a real stinker yesterday. I again, he's another guy that I really like, but he didn't perform particularly well. And I think in a game like this, where we needed to rely on runs in behind, we just didn't have that, because it's not really an aspect of Saka's game. Trossard doesn't do it at all. He wants to come infield and have the ball at his feet. But again, it's a game of fine margins, really. You know, we hit the bar in that first half through Trossard's. We did win possession quite high up the pitch quite a lot of times. We just didn't do anything with it. I thought Brighton, in fairness to them, in that second half when they really started to purr, that's just everything about them. They're passing, they're pressing, the way they played out from our press. I mean, I had no idea that Steele, their goalkeeper, was so good with the ball at his feet. He was fantastic. So I think we were just outplayed, to be honest. It was a very bitty game. Brighton were very good at doing what we did up at Newcastle, slowing the game down at every opportunity, not allowing us to get into any sort of rhythm, any sort of pattern of play. And it was just a very frustrating first half. I think I'd go as far as saying it was one of the most languid first halves of football we've seen this season. And it just wasn't the ferocious, exciting, you know, field of energy and pace sort of performance that I'd expect from Arsenal. And yeah, it just kind of set the tone of the game going into that second 45.
Okay. So from your perspective, first half, how do you pick apart what's going through your mind now, 24 hours later, on that first half? Because the reason I'm asking that question is because I've listened to a couple of mates, and some of them are saying we actually played really, really well in that first half. And I seem to have an equal number of mates that are also saying, no, we were terrible. So where do you stand on that first half, particularly, before we then we'll get into the second half in a bit?
That's a really interesting question, Chris, because when I was in the stadium, I thought to myself, gosh, we're not playing well at all. Like, we're not in control here. And Brighton were pressing us really well. They slowed down the ball very, very well. You know, Steele, as you've just mentioned, Cookie with the ball at his feet, like just slowing it down. It felt like the game was just irritated by continuous fouls. And there was, you know, I think Brighton made 17 fouls. That's got to be up there as a high in a game this season. And that was frustrating. And I think it was also just, you know, in line with how I felt about what happened at Goodison, as we've already talked about.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com. For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com. For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
The game itself, when I sort of came home, watched it back, watched the match of the day highlights, I think we actually didn't do so bad in the first half. And when you think about the chances that we created, we could have quite easily gone in at halftime 1-0, maybe even 2. And it was that sort of a game, that sort of an environment, atmosphere, where I thought, okay, the first goal, would probably dictate how this game goes. And had Trossard have scored, or had Saka have scored just before halftime, that would have been a killer blow. Brighton didn't seem as if they were anything special, but they were just working really hard and pressing us. They were really well organized, I thought. So look, the first half could have gone either way. Obviously, we've gone in goalless, and at that point I'm thinking, right, Mikel, get them in the changing room, G them up a bit, because it was so flat, it was so timid, I think, from Arsenal. And to answer your earlier question, I think, Chris, I can't remember who you asked, but it was, I sort of sat here wondering, did it mentally sort of get to us? Like, you know, we do forget that we're ahead here of time slightly in terms of where we are in competing with City. We do have a very young, inexperienced squad and manager. And I just wonder if, you know, the pressure of it all, three games to go, the light is very much at the end of this tunnel. Was it just too much, you know, the way that City had sort of dismantled Everton? So it just wasn't a classic Arsenal performance of this season. We could have gone in ahead and we probably would have won the game. But then, of course, we come out second half and once they've scored one, heads have dropped, shoulders have dropped, the tired legs come out and we just sort of fell apart.
Yeah, that was the disappointing thing. We'll get to the second half in a second, but you're right. At half time, that Saka chance, like he's taken those quite a lot, hasn't he? He's taken a few of those this season, and you're just thinking to yourself, well, you know, it's not that bad. We've had a few chances. If I think back off the top of my head of the chances Brighton created in that first half, there was that one which flashed across the goal and the guys just blazed it over. I can't really remember another time. And as you were just saying, FK, it was like, when I reflect on that first half, I think, well, we weren't amazing, but we created a fair few chances. Brighton weren't amazing and didn't really create any chances. Interesting that you were saying about the 17 fouls. And obviously, well, Amanda, I know you want to talk about the refereeing, so we might as well get to that before we then talk about the second half. Very bitty game, as FK said. Arsenal conceded 13 fouls. Brighton conceded 17 fouls. Could there be a red card or two? I'm thinking, supposedly, I haven't seen this, but supposedly Gary Neville in commentary wasn't too happy with Martin. At least challenge on, I think that was Caicedo. But then Caicedo went in through the back of Martinelli about 5 minutes later, which looked like a yellow card to me. So let's pick up just some thoughts. We'll do a bit of a quick round table on thoughts on the refereeing performance yesterday. Amanda.
Disgraceful. No control. I don't know what he was watching. So when Martinelli fouled, I said to Carl, that doesn't look nice. And Carl went, it's fine. I went, it don't look nice. But again, we don't get to see replays, do we? And I wasn't on social media at the time. And then he literally in front of us, he dragged his foot down his leg and I was going mental because that was a revenge tackle for sure. And I went on Twitter straight away as Martinelli was getting treatment, going, that's disgusting. But loads of Arsenal fans were telling me that Martinelli was lucky to be on the pitch, plus other fans were telling me that. So when Arsenal fans are telling me that, I'm like, oh my God, really? Was it that bad? We don't get to see. But many Arsenal fans were saying, lucky Martinelli's still on the pitch. If he'd have booked Caicedo or whoever it was, if he'd have booked Martinelli and calmed it down, they wouldn't have gone for the revenge tackle on Martinelli. And that is the referee's fault. It's not the player's fault. It's the referee. He is like the parent of that game and he has to control it. And he didn't. He lost control. He had no control. He didn't care that Brighton were continuously fouling us and kicking the ball away. Oh my God. And how many times they go down with cramp? They had two players down so many times. It ruins the game. It slows the game and it frustrates the fans and you can't get into any flow because they stopped every bit of flow. Good luck to them. They got away with it. They ended up winning 3-0. But just go back to what you were saying. At half time, me and my cousin and my cousin's son were arguing about whether we thought we were good. So me and my cousin's son were like, yeah, I thought we had a really good first half. My cousin went, we didn't. Terrible. Isn't it funny how we can't actually, there was no middle ground there. We were like, what game are you watching? We played really well this first half. Obviously, second half, we all agree we were absolutely terrible. But it's really interesting. And I think with regards to the referees, we haven't lost the league because a referee has been crap. We haven't. We've lost the referee for quite a few reasons. We haven't. Chris, because VAR helped us at Newcastle when it wasn't a handball.
Not so United or Brentford, though.
No, I understand that. But there are times where they've stopped and it's been overturned or we've given a penalty and things like that. I know he didn't draw the lines at Brentford, but it doesn't mean we would have won the game. I get that. But what I don't get is, and I mean, and not being funny, the goalkeeper didn't even waste any time yesterday. The whole bloody, every single Brighton player on that pitch did. And it ruins the game. And how they can't see this, I don't know. But yet we get slaughtered and we don't even waste time. we wasted time for 2 minutes at not Newcastle, at Liverpool. We got slaughtered for it. The whole season, every team has wasted time against us. So referees need to take more control. They're actually ruining the game. They need it. He should have booked Martinelli, and he definitely should have booked Caicedo, and then calm it down, because then the next player knows he's getting a yellow. I don't even know how many Brighton players got a yellow in the first half. I don't think any of them did, though.
There was only one in the entire match. I don't know. Can't remember when that was.
Oh, my God. One. Don't start me off. I'm fuming anyway. One.
Sorry, that's not true. That's two. They got two. We had one. We had one. They had two. I want to bring Mr. Cook and then FK in just with some thoughts before we get into the second half. If you have any questions, please feel free to put them in the chat. We will dedicate a good 5-10 minutes at the end of the show where Amanda will take over and become question master for us before we wrap up. So make sure you drop your questions into the chat. James, refereeing, you want to have a word or two before we move on to the second half? And I'll get FK your thoughts on the refereeing stuff as well.
Yeah, I won't take up too much time on this one because I think Amanda's kind of echoed everyone's thoughts surrounding it. The only other thing that I would mention was that really bizarre decision in, was it the first or second half, where we started a counter-attack really quickly, threw the ball, and the linesman put his flag up for offside, which was just... I mean, the bloke in front of me, I thought he was going to have a seizure. He was going that mental about it. it's just like, come on. This is the highest level of football, and we're making those kind of decisions. It's absolutely disgraceful. So, yeah, that coinciding with everything else that happened in the game, I don't think this is any excuse whatsoever as to why we lost it. But again, it's just like, it sums up what's been a poor season of officiating.
Yeah, FK?
Yeah, look, I think Amanda's nailed it in terms of the Martinelli situation. I think he could have addressed that and calmed that down a lot sooner. And of course, Martinelli getting clattered by Caicedo and now in a protective boot. That's not great. I think Andy Madley has previous. He was responsible for the Arsenal-Newcastle game, the goalless one where the ball was in play for such little time. What annoys me is that you should allow rotational fouls. You should allow time wasting. You should allow the goalkeeper to take as long as he wants. But you just need to make up for it by giving ample injury time. And, you know, if a keeper wants to take forever, if players want to roll around and get the physio on and do whatever they need to do, if they want to slow down the game by making substitutions, whatever, like just play 7, 8, 10, 12 minutes injury time. It's not a problem. We saw it in the World Cup. And just my final point on officiating, Cookies just sort of like prompted it in my mind, but the Premier League is a global product and it is incredible. It's the best league in the world. It's about time that we ditched our British referees and thought about just bringing in the best refs from around Europe's leagues. Like, we poach the best coaches. We poach some of the best players. Just go out and get the best refs and give this game and its fans what they deserve, which is elite refereeing. There are so many good refs that you see, like in European competitions, like so many of the Champions League games that I've been watching on with envy over the last 2 or 3 years. They flow so beautifully. Like, the referees don't take any shit. Oh, sorry. And they...
No, you're good.
Oh, good. Oh, yeah, Amanda's on. What am I talking about? but the refs, they give as good as they get. They're very confident and the game flows. Like, you don't even notice the ref. In England, it seems like every week we're talking about one ref, and it's not just Arsenal. So, you know, it's time. The Premier League, PGMOL, whatever, just go out and get the best refs in the world, because the product is inferior for it.
Yep, absolutely. And do you know what? So they've. I saw something earlier, someone saying that Howard Webb is going on Monday Night Football, which I think, you know, is obviously going on now. That's the sort of thing that needs to happen. Stand up and front up if you're Howard Webb and say, look, I'm here. This is what I'm going to try and do. And that's another thing that they can do, FK. You know, we've had 25, 30 years ago, footballers didn't really want to come to the UK, come to England. And then the money from the Premier League got people interested. And now it has generally become the best league, not just because there's the money in it, but we also have the best talent in it. You're not telling me that if you get the best referee in La Liga and you say to him, well, double your money, come and live in England for a few years, as if he's going to say, no, I really like my paella and nice weather. So I don't think I'll double your money, but I absolutely echo what you said there. Right, boys
can,
and girls.
Can I just say one thing, Chris, on the ref thing? For me, it's not so much about having interviews with the referee after a game and holding them accountable. I think a lot of fans want that. You know, they want them to come out and interview just like a player does. Because I think all you're going to do in that instance is highlight something that a decision has been made and has been done wrong, and you're just going to basically batter him until he caves and says something stupid. What I would like to see, though, is refs being mic'd up. And if a ref is mic'd up during a game and they allow fans or coaches and players, I mean, forget us, as long as if Mikel and the players can watch a game back and listen to every interaction with the ref and understand why decisions are made in such scenarios, and the players also learn. So it's not always about just, you know, bring the ref out on camera and interview him after the game and like hang him out to dry type thing, because no one's going to want to do that. But if you mic them up and you learn about why referees are making such decisions and you're sort of hearing their explanations, maybe you can understand a bit more as to why they do what they do.
Yeah, and that's been the problem with the PGMOL world historically, is it's felt like, you know, the drawbridge has come up and nobody can get in behind the walls. Right, boys and girls, we are going to have to...
Hold on, can I just say something? Sorry, Chris. But wasn't VAR brought in to help this? It's a joke. They need proper people, ex-players, behind a VAR. I mean, surely... I just don't get what people see. And I'm not just talking only Arsenal here. I've watched many matches, Brighton offside, Brighton against Tottenham. And I'm going to stop, because we could do VAR refereeing in this country for hours, and I won't.
Yeah, and we do need to do the uncomfortableness, and that is that second half. Who shall I pick on first to relive the absolute horror? Shall we go for? Let's go for the one that looks like the youngest, like he's not got the most age on him. So
thank you. So
smooth, FK, smooth. Cookie, then FK. Come on in. Second half. What went wrong?
What went wrong? I mean, what went right? It was just, yeah, it was one of the worst halves of football that I think I've seen at the Emirates. And, you know, there's a way of losing. There's a way of conceding the title. And after that performance last week, like you said previously, Amanda, to go from what was just so exciting, such a good performance, to that was just demoralising, to be quite honest. I didn't feel quite the heartbreak that I think a lot of people were feeling, because there was obviously that slight sliver of hope. But I kind of, not to sound defeatist, but I was pretty much resigned to the title being gone when we lost away at City. And anything else from there on in was a bonus for me. And then obviously we got that win at Newcastle, which I didn't expect. And I was reinvigorated with life. But then City go and win so convincingly at Everton. And yeah, it just set the tone for the game. And I do think that result weighed quite heavy on us. But I just think we were outdone by a better team than us on the day. The first goal we conceded, I mean, Kivior's come out and said that he felt a foul. He expected VAR to intervene. He lost his boot. But again, you've got to play to the whistle. Like, you can't just go down like that. It doesn't matter how bad the foul is. You've got to defend like your life is on the line. And it was quite pitiful from us, not just from Kivior, but the defending on that first goal was just really, really poor in general. And again, it's another set piece that we've been undone by this season. How many corners have we conceded from this season? Particularly in the second half of the campaign. When you look back at last season and we conceded from a corner on what? The final day or the second from final day? And this season, it's just been such a cataclysmic problem for us. Not just corners, but set pieces in general has been such a huge problem. And then the other goals are just embarrassing, to be honest. And okay, Brighton are a very good team. They've done some really good stuff this season. But losing at home, 3-0 to Brighton, whatever states you're in as a football club, is not a good look. And that, I say that with all due respect to Brighton. They thoroughly deserve the win. Better team than us on the day. But we've now lost 3 times in a row at home to Brighton. That is not good enough. We really, really have to do something about that. But props to them. I mean, they were fantastic. They outplayed us. Their playing out from the back was the best I've seen at the Emirates. I'd go as far as saying they were as good, if not better, than Man City when they came and played us a couple of months ago. So, yeah, all the credit to them. They deserve the points. But it did feel like we've resigned the title in very much a whimper. And, you know, I would have loved to have taken us to the final day, because I know a lot of us were banking on City dropping points against Everton. And okay, it comes between those Real Madrid games and it was the most likely one for them to potentially have to rotate and drop points in. But I was really looking at Brighton away and Brentford away, because okay, you know, it's unlikely they're going to drop points in two of those games, but all they had to do was lose one and draw one. And they're two of the toughest away games to go to. And that's why I did want us to win yesterday, because even though, like I said before, I fully expected City to go on and win this title, at least you got that chance. Like, if they went to Brighton and drew and we won yesterday and we'd gone to Forest and won, it goes to the final day. Like, how exciting would that have been? So, yeah, went out with a whimper, really disappointed.
Yeah. And from your perspective, FK, so the original question was what went wrong? Just, but also thoughts on that first goal. You calling that a foul, or are you just thinking we've got to be stronger there?
Yeah, I didn't want to interrupt Cookie there, but I do feel that I think some views have been quite harsh on Kivior, not to say that Cookie has been, but there was definite contact, and it's difficult to judge just how much damage there was to his Achilles or his heel or whatever. I mean, his boot was off, so there was obviously something that's taken his boot off, and there's no reason for a defender to go down the way that he did in that scenario. So Estupiñán's obviously bounced the ball into the ground. It's kind of fallen nicely to Enciso, who's about 4 foot tall, and he's nodded home past Ramsdale. He didn't really have much chance because he's standing close to him. So when you look at it as a replay, and everything always looks worse in replays, it's just clumsy defending. And Jakub, I think, does get a knock. So, you know, maybe VAR on another day calls it back for a foul. I think the point that I want to make is, though, they scored in the 51st minute. Of course, it knocks us the wind out of your sail, because we've gone in at halftime thinking, right, let's come out second half, get an early goal first 15, 20, settle down and just win the game. They've obviously done that. It's a sucker punch, bit of blow. And we've still got, though, 40 minutes to respond. And the most disappointing thing is that we just couldn't muster up any chances. Like, we couldn't string four or five passes together. And I wonder if, as soon as that goal went in, you know, the head sort of dropped, the shoulders dropped. We've talked about leaders many, many times over the years, Amanda and I certainly. And it's at that moment when the going gets tough that you need your experienced leaders to really take the game by the scruff of the neck. And we just couldn't get control. And then, of course, Undav, I think, was a substitute. Ramsdale's a bit of a hospital pass straight out to Trossard, who flicks it, tries to flick it neatly, trying to be too cute. It's gone straight to their player. And, you know, he's lobbed Ramsdale from about 10 yards out, or whatever. Ramsdale was fuming with that. And then, you know, the icing on the cake is the killer blow, what, not 5-6 minutes into injury time, when Estupiñán bounces on a rebounded shot. And I think at that point, Arsenal were gone. So, yeah, I think it goes back to what I said earlier, Chris, that I think it was one of those games where the first goal would have dictated the flow of the game. Both teams, you know, we're begging for that. And let's not forget, Brighton, ironically, were pumped by Everton just a few days before, 5-1. So, you know, they wanted to make a point, and they certainly have.
They made a very big point. I think so as well. I'd actually written that down as a question that you just kind of answered. So you're a psychic FK on the pod, which is, did all hope drain at 1-0? I think you're right. I think at 1-0, because even they scored on 51 minutes. And at 51 minutes, I'm thinking to myself, you know what? We've been behind plenty of times this season, and we've shown fight. I remember the Villa game right at the beginning of the season. I think they either brought it back level to 1-1, but then we scored like a minute or two later, and it was just like really set us up for a fantastic rest of the season, like the fight back that this team has shown. But in the last 4 to 6 weeks, there's just been a fragility. There's been a glass jaw about us in defence, and it's been silly mistakes. You go back to the West Ham game, Thomas Partey, you've got the Southampton game with Aaron Ramsdale, you've got, there was multiple mistakes in one of the build-ups to the Man City result. You've got even the Chelsea game that we won, you know, Zinchenko switching off at the back post. Then you've got yesterday, you've got both Ramsdale and Trossard, again, as James said, not really having a very good game. It just felt like it things have been going against us, where earlier on in the season, those flicks were coming off. And I don't know whether that's tiredness, I don't know if that's fatigue or what, but I want to actually start, because so we've gone through, obviously, the goals. I want to ask you guys about tactics, because to me, Arteta said afterwards, well, we approached this game in the same way that we approached the game at the Amex. And I think that was a bit of an error of judgment from my perspective, because to me, you can't treat the two games the same, because Brighton are going to try and come onto you even more at home. And so you're going to be able to pick them off like Everton did. Whereas their game plan yesterday was very much to draw us out, because the emphasis is on us to press higher up the pitch and then just play around our press. So Amanda, just from your perspective, I want to talk about the tactics that Arteta adopted, both by admitting that the Brighton, we just applied the same approach as when we played them on New Year's Eve, but then also the tactic which I noticed, which was Ramsdale going long to Gabriel Jesus to win what felt like about 10% of his aerial duels, because he's 5'9" up against like 6'4" Lewis Dunk. Did Arteta get it wrong? We'll do another round robin on that one, and just any thoughts from that. So, Amanda, your perspective.
I think maybe his tactics weren't put into place by the players. Why was Ramsdale going long when you had the shortest player on the pitch against the tallest? Didn't understand it. I actually don't know what to say to that, Chris, because if this were the tactics, then he's got it completely wrong. We were atrocious second half. We didn't even start giving the ball away. Could you name a man of the match for us if you had to? No, not one of them. Odegaard, I saw, was trying to G them up. I watched him off the ball trying to G them up, and everyone seemed flat. And the only thing I would say about the tactic side of it, I would have started with Trossard and put Saka on in the second half if we needed him. I think we needed to freshen up that side, because as much as Saka has been unbelievable, the last few games he has been quiet, and he's probably burnt out the poor boy. He's been incredible. So I don't know if they put his tactics into the game, because if they did, then that's worrying. And you know how much I bloody adore Arteta. I did see at times he was quite annoyed. You know, I sit right opposite him virtually, and he sat down, and then the coach got up, and I'm thinking, are they doing what they've been told to do? Because none of them played well. So I don't know. I don't know what anyone else thinks, because I can't answer the question. The tactics might have been right, but they might not have put them into action correct.
What do you think, Cookie?
I don't know how much we can actually take from that game at the Amex, because we scored practically within the first 2-3 minutes of that game, which, as we all know, changes a game massively. So I don't quite think we can look into that game too much. And if you remember, towards the end of the second half, it was chaos in that game. Like, we were quite fortunate in the end to actually win it, because they had so many chances. They almost had a penalty, didn't they? I mean, God, it was absolutely crazy, that game. So I personally would not read into that game too much and compare it to this one. I think this was a totally different kettle of fish. I'm going to disagree with Amanda slightly on the Saka being burnt out. I don't think he is. I think he's really suffering as a result of Saliba not being in the team. And again, with Zinchenko being out, I mean, we lose so much of our progressive play, and he's just not seeing the ball. I know Zinchenko starts on the left, but the amount of times he passes to Saka, like, he really gets him involved in the game. So I think, that's a big problem. Obviously, we haven't really got an overlapping fullback in Ben White. He does it to the best of his ability, but it just really is limiting Saka's ability to do what he does best. And all that said, I don't actually think he had a bad game. I think in the first half, we know he created that chance to score. He did what he does best. He holds the ball up well, creates opportunities. But in that second half, I mean, he was just kind of a product of his environment, as was every other player, because it was just languid. It was really, really, really slow and tepid. I mean, we can talk about tactics all day long, but I think ultimately Brighton are the team that had the better tactics. They knew how to break from our press. They knew how to ultimately beat our style of playing. And they got what they deserved. I think we were undone by De Zerbi, if I'm being totally honest. And, there's no shame in admitting that. He's a very good coach. He's done wonderful things with Brighton. And Arteta's a very young coach. And you would hope that, as he has done with so many things this season, he'll learn from this game.
Yeah, FK, did Arteta get his tactics wrong? Discuss.
Yeah, look, I think Cookie sort of linked it there. De Zerbi has delivered a pressing masterclass yesterday, in my opinion. I think Brighton are a very organised team. They've got a great structure, hard workers and big runners in that team. And they pressed almost to perfection. They allowed us to have the ball amongst the sort of back 2-3. They weren't fussed about that, because they know that we couldn't damage them. As soon as the ball went into the middle third of the pitch, and certainly into their defensive third or our offensive third, they were really good. And they won the ball back quickly. They're aggressive. They're centre-backs. I think Amanda mentioned the point about Ramsdale going long. I mean, Dunk's going to eat that up all day long. Arsenal, on the other hand, we were not pressing aggressively. And every time Brighton started playing, they had a bit of an overload on both sides, particularly down the Martinelli side. So I just feel that Brighton got it spot on. We weren't quite switched on. And their ability to play through the press is also pretty bloody impressive. Mm. And the last thing that I'll say is that, you know, when we beat Brighton away at the Amex earlier in the season, was it 4-1?
4-2, I think it was.
Was it 4-2? Brighton actually had, I think, just shy of 70% possession in that game. And so it's not really always, you know, having control of the ball in terms of possession and stuff. It's kind of what you do with it. And Cookie's mentioned it. You see, when you score so early, that's like, again, it goes back to my point about if we'd have scored first yesterday, it probably would have gone in our favour. But as soon as Brighton take the lead, it'd be interesting to see how many points Brighton have given up from being in a winning position in a game, because I can't imagine it's that many. So Credit to Brighton. And I think we've touched upon it all throughout tonight's show, but Brighton have come and done the job, and they've done it really well. And there's things that Mikel will take away from it. But even though we were quite timid in terms of our press and stuff, the players were just flat, mate. So we can talk about team structure and lineup, whether it was a 4-2-3-1 or whatever. The mood was just off. We've all been following this team for many, many years, even though Cookie's got the baby face. Like, he knows, like, we know that when Arsenal are up for it, that first 10, 15 minutes, you just know what Arsenal's going to come out in that game. But yesterday, it just felt flat from the moment that the game sort of kicked off. And I guess the writing was on the wall, quite sadly.
Yeah, I mean, as for Brighton, interesting what you were saying about how many times do they go ahead or win or lose or stuff like that. They're a bit like us last season. They've won 17 of their sort of 34, 33. They've won 17 and they've lost 10. They don't draw many games. They win or they tend to lose. And that probably rings true without looking at any of the data about going behind or going in front type thing. And so maybe that is one of the answers which just changes the dynamic of the game. We are coming close to getting through some of your questions. I'm going to hand over to Amanda in a minute, but probably a good segue, which I was actually had written down just to ask you guys, which is what happens now for the last two games. So Phil Macker has put a question in, so we could probably just merge my question with Phil's, which is, season over, does ESR start the last two games? But I will broaden it out beyond that, which is, to me, it feels like we've got two dead rubbers now, if I'm completely honest. So how much experimentation would you do, Amanda?
Well, first of all, I think we're going to win both games because they mean nothing. Second of all, if City lose three games, we win the league. Do you know that's even funnier? If City lose three games and we win out till we won the league.
City have won the last 11 in a row, Amanda. Time to come back down to earth.
I'm not saying they will, and I'm not doing my mathematical thing because I don't think we've got a chance in hell. They only need 2 points to win the league. I don't know, actually. I've not really thought about experimentation because I think we need to go to Forest and beat them, and we need to beat Wolves, and we need to end the season on a bloody high. And I think that the fans will be up for it and supporting them as much as they can at Forest away next Sunday. And I think the Emirates will be rocking on the last game of the season. You know we're going to win because it don't mean anything, and we always win when it doesn't mean anything. But it does mean something because, you know, being second is incredible. We know that, and I'm going to go into that later. But I wouldn't change anything, if I'm honest. I mean, I don't know, maybe give Saka a rest, ESR on. I'm upset that people are slagging ESR off, to be honest. The boy needs minutes, the boy needs games. And does everyone forget what a fantastic talent he was? And he had a bad injury. We've missed him terribly. If anyone wants to go at ESR, they have to come through me because I really, really don't agree with this nonsense about ESR yesterday or anything. But don't know, just play whoever, you know. It is a massive summer. It is massive for us because next year we have to go again and do what we've done. We've been top for what was we not top for a couple of games, you know, and I'm unbelievably proud of them. Absolutely disappointed, but unbelievably proud. So I want us to go and win our last two games and win them good. I know people are going to say, oh, you know what, the pressure was off. Look at you. Of course, you've won. But I want to see some good football. I want to see how we play. We've not, against Brighton, we didn't play. Against Newcastle, we were tremendous. And it is a confidence thing because you're right. We score first yesterday. It's not going to be, we're not going to lose. I really couldn't see that.
Cookie, retain them all, play the kids.
No, I wouldn't be playing all the kids. There are certain players I would like to see get some minutes. Reece Nelson is definitely one of them. And I'd be tempted maybe to take out Saka, or, you know, even take out Trossard, because I'm very, very doubtful that Martinelli is going to play any more minutes this season. And to be honest, I wouldn't risk him, given that he went off yesterday in a protective boot. So I think, you know, that left wing is completely open for either Nelson or Trossard. But again, you know, like we were saying earlier, Saka's been a bit underwhelming. Reece Nelson has a different game to Saka. Maybe he doesn't need that reliance on Saliba to pass the ball to him. So maybe give Nelson a chance off the right-hand side. So I think there's a lot of options that we could go with. I don't want us to throw these last two games. I want us to win them both. And I think Smith Rowe, again, is someone that I love the guy, but I just need to see more from him. And I know it's really difficult this season because he's been so out of the team. He's not even been in and out of the team. He's just been out of the team. I don't think I'd start him against Forest. I think that's going to be a really high-intensity game. And given what I saw of him yesterday and given what I've seen from him in recent months when he's had those small cameos, I don't think that's the right game for him. But Wolves at home, yeah, why not? Like, why play him on one of the wings? Play him in Erdogan's position. Switch it up a little bit, because I'm convinced whoever plays that day, we're going to win 5-0. I've got that in my mind. We're going to win that game comfortably. But Forest, I think, is a totally different opposition because they're fighting for their lives. We're not going to have much motivation going into that game. I think it'll be a really exciting game to watch. I don't know if we'll win it. I wouldn't say I'm confident that we'll win it. I'll probably bring Partey back in place of Jorginho. But apart from that, I don't really know what else I would change. I don't know how much else you can change, to be quite honest with you, because we've got these injuries that we're dealing with. You know, I wouldn't bring Rob Holding back in. We can't make a change at right back. We can't make a change at left back. We can't make a change at left centre back. So the only options you've really got are in midfield. Be nice to see Raul Walters get some minutes off the bench, maybe, if we're in a position to do that. But apart from that, yeah, I think the focus now just has to be on seeing out the season professionally, getting two wins if we can do. I'm not banking on one this weekend, but it would be nice if we can, and then definitely get a win against Wolves. And then, like, you know, we're all thinking, we need a big summer. We need three, I think, ready-made, experienced players to come into this team. You know, Declan Rice, of course, Caicedo being one of them, but then someone else. I can't get their names out off the top of my head, but we need it. We desperately need it, because we are that close. You know, it's been frustrating in the past couple of months, but we are within touching distance, and there's definitely a lot to play for. I mean, I'm not buying into this absolute garbage that, you know, we had to win it this season. Absolutely not. Can you imagine if we were fighting for top four and we got it on the last day of the season against Wolves? Totally different perspective we would have. Like, we would be absolutely elated. We'd be buzzing. But next season, I want Arsenal fighting on all fronts. Champions League, FA Cup, Carabao Cup, Premier League. I would love to see that, because the one thing that has disappointed me this season, we're empty-handed. I would have loved a bit of silverware, even if it was the FA Cup. So, yeah, win these next two games, see it out professionally. We go again next year.
And FK, just before we move on to the questions, is this a full house from you in terms of echoing the sentiments of the guys, or are you wanting to lace up your Puma Kings and get yourself out on there and say, Mikel, nothing to play for, get me on at the City Ground?
I would love to get out there. I echo, it's a bit of both. I echo what Cookie's saying about Forest being a really tough game. They've come into a bit of form last couple of games. They play with a good intensity. Final home game of the season, fighting for their lives. I actually fear for us this weekend. I think it could be a score draw or a fancy for us to nick it. If I'm Mikel Arteta, I'm sending Bukayo Saka, Ben White on holiday now. He's not going to do that, because I think he's going to want them to play for the final home game of the season against Wolves, and they'll get a great standing sort of ovation for what an extraordinary season with so many fantastic memories that we're all going to take away from us. But yeah, I would look at the sort of top two, three performers, Granit Xhaka, Saka, Ben White, wrap them up in cotton wool, get them out to a beach somewhere for a few weeks now. I mean, the World Cup has had its knock-on effect. Bukayo Saka's probably not had a rest since the Euros. And, you know, the boy is on the verge. He's in the red zone, as Arsene would say. So that's what I would do. But I think Arteta's probably going to go as strong as he can. He'll go strong against Wolves again. And then it's just a case of dusting down, getting ready for the summer window, and maybe potentially the Community Shield if City do the treble. So, yeah, I think we'll spank Wolves, but I think we'll come undone at Forest.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you as well. I'd probably rotate a few as well. Amanda, should we get into some questions the last sort of five, six minutes or so?
Yeah, sure. We've got so many questions. Thank you to everyone in the chat room, and especially to FK joining us. And I just want to say quickly that FK and I have known each other a long time, haven't we, FK?
A long time.
We used to go to all the little AST meetings. We'd have dinner and argue continuously.
All about the time. Arsene Wenger. I'm just going to say all the GOAT, the greatest of all time.
I love him though. So go and check out his podcast and your spaces as well, which are really, really good post show on Twitter with Gav, and very good. Does some fantastic content for people that don't know him, but I'm assuming everyone knows him.
Thank you.
Let's go to some questions. Right. If anyone doesn't know, I'm just going to do a little funny one from poorly drawn Arsenal. Does FK's wife know that Arsenal won't win the league, or will he have to pretend so that way the holiday cancellation is justified? Poorly drawn Arsenal, we love you.
Yeah, I do. I love him as well. It's been a great day for that. I mean, I've been in the Daily Mail, I've been in the Sun, I've been on TalkSport, Premier League Productions, just about this story. Very, very quickly, for anybody who's unfamiliar. So months before this current Premier League season started, my wife and I, we obviously like to travel, and we wanted to book a holiday with the family, two beautiful young children, to go to Mauritius. And we'd booked it for this coming half term, which starts on the 26th of May. And it's a week long, so we booked the trip. The season starts, Arsenal flying. We go into the World Cup, we're top of the league. We come out of the World Cup, we're top of the league, obviously. January transfer window comes and goes, top of the league. March is coming along. Like, we've just had such an amazing season. But there was a Friday night where we went up to the Etihad to play Manchester City in the FA Cup. And I went with Wally, who you know, one Wally the One, and Yembele, one of my friends on the Latte Firm YouTube channel. And it was on the way back after we'd been beaten, of course, that night at the Etihad in the FA Cup, that we were just talking about, oh, what a season it could be. Now we can focus our energies on winning the league title. And the conversation just came up about, well, when's the last game? And it was like, oh, yeah, it's on the 28th of May. And I just had this shiver in the car thinking,
your heart
shit,
sunk.
28th of May. Like, I'm in Mauritius on the 26th. What are we doing? So I've basically come home like 3 o'clock in the morning that night. That was a Friday night. Saturday, I've got on the phone to Qoni, who've been amazing throughout this whole experience. And I've basically cancelled the holiday. Without telling the wife, and my wife annoyingly had set up her email address with the booking. So the cancellation went to her, and that's how she found out.
Hold on. Let me back up here. You didn't tell her, and I don't know this story.
No, so...
Well, you just cancelled it.
Yeah, I'd cancelled the holiday. We managed to book forward our deposit. We couldn't book another date because the half-term week is only it's like 5 days. And Mauritius is not the sort of place where you can go for just a weekend, right? So I cancelled it. She got the cancellation. We had many days of talking and negotiations. I mean, she's done well for herself now. She's got a really, really expensive handbag, which I'm a bit annoyed about. But we've got two holidays booked in the pipeline, which of course is lovely. But yeah, listen, people will be laughing, but I had to cancel the holiday because Mauritius will always be Mauritius, subject to climate change. But Arsenal, we were looking so good, and it's a chance to win a first league title in 19 years that I couldn't risk missing that final game and potential subsequent parade. And I'll be honest with you, guys and gals, the game's the game. And if I was presented with the opportunity again, I'd do it again. I've got no regrets. She understands now. She understands. Like, we've been married 10 years. We've been together for 12. And she knows exactly what football means to me. And people will laugh and people will say it's been pathetic. I've been taking so many pelters all day today. But the reality is, you know, the club is so special to me, as is so special to all of you guys. When you've got a chance to win a league title, and it was a slim chance, I get that. But it hasn't cost me anything apart from a bloody handbag. But that's the story. So like,
well,
Lad Bible, Sport Bible all picked it up, and ESPN
brilliant.
Sport tweeted it. It's been nuts, nuts all day.
But you just don't expect, do you, the season to go to the 28th of May. Normally it's mid-May and
exactly.
It's done.
So when we booked it, we booked it thinking, right, end of May, no problem. And then, of course, it was like World Cup in the middle of and then we didn't know what the Premier League date fixtures were going to be. And Qoni couldn't offer me any sort of like alternative flight. So it was just a case of, right, Mr. Khan, you've just got to cancel it. So I did. Telling her was hard. Like, it wasn't pretty. but that's just the way it is. You know me, Amanda. You've known me for years. You know how much this club means to me. And you know, one first title in 19, now 20 years it's gonna be. If it's next year, if it happened again, I'd do the same thing again.
Oh, bless you. It's brilliant. No, I get that. Oh, right. Nigel Plum. I don't know if all of you know about this because it happened quite late on. What are your views on what Martin Keown said on TalkSport today regarding the anti-Arsenal bias during Sky's commentary. Chris, does all of you know about this?
Yeah, I've seen it, Martin Cairn. I can't honestly say that I get what he's saying, but I can't honestly say, I mean, that's true. I think there's probably something around the fact that we're always up against, or the commentary or the pundits are always either ex-Chelsea, ex-Liverpool, ex-Man United, and that probably has an impact. So they're kind of, their partisan support is naturally going to lean towards those clubs. But the problem is I don't watch enough Martin Tyler anymore, because for the Arsenal home games, I'm there. So I don't tend to watch enough of it. But I have heard that, you know, the supposed disappointment in his voice when Ødegaard scored at Tottenham, I've seen something there which looked a little bit weird. And there's a funny, I think it's a TikTok, I can't remember who the guy is, who does like a voiceover of Martin Tyler. And it's really funny. I need to dig it out and need to tell people about it. But it is like this guy that's essentially like pulling faces, like almost like mouthing Tyler being disappointed. But I don't think there's really that sort of bias, is there?
I do. I'll tell you something. I've had to mute them at times. Gary Neville's the worst. He's just so bitter against us. And Martin Tyler's miserable when we score. Honestly, the bias, Chris, is there. And I do what, I mean, I watch other games as well, not only us. And he's fine with other, I think it's there. What do you think, FK and James?
Personally, I don't see it. I don't think it's biased. I think Martin Tyler's been in the game so long that he's just getting to an age now, respectfully, where he's probably thinking about retiring, and he just hasn't got the energy and the intensity that he would have had as a commentator. I mean, I can recall so many games over the years where Martin Tyler commentary over an Arsenal goal has been, you know, an unbelievable sort of voiceover. The Tony Adams, would you believe it? I mean, that was him. Like, he wasn't quiet. He wasn't subdued at that point. He was just at the pomp of his career. Whereas now I just think, you know, he's probably close to retirement and he's just an elderly man. And that's just the way that it is. And I say that because I met him on the tube a couple of years ago and he was just distinctively sort of frail. And he's not the same guy that he was when we were growing up. What I would also say is that the pundits do seem biased. You know, you do get a lot of ex-Liverpool, ex-Manchester United. Gary Neville, of course, has said a few things about this club, but I don't think it's that deep. And the last thing I'll say is that I think it was Dave Seager who wrote a book, and was it Martin Tyler who provided the foreword and stuff for Arsene Wenger and wrote or reviewed it? So, Chris, you're nodding. I mean, if it was the case that he hates Arsenal, I don't know if he'd be involved in something like that. So I don't know if it exists, but maybe the evidence suggests otherwise.
James, I don't know if he hates Arsenal, but he's not a lover of us. And I know what you're saying, FK. He's an older man. He's 77. He's my dad's age, and they become grumpy. That's for sure. You men over 50 become grumpy. But however, I do feel that he just sounds miserable when he's talking about us. And, you know, I mean, for Martin Keown to come out and say that, there must be something maybe or not. Do you not think that?
I don't know, to be honest. If you look at a lot of his commentary, those TikToks that you allude to, Chris, they're not about Arsenal. A lot of the time, they're about so many teams. So I don't think it's an Arsenal thing, to be honest. But the one person I will pick out is definitely Gary Neville. Because although I do think at times he speaks a lot of sense, but it was no coincidence that today, all over his Instagram, all over his TikTok, he's posting clips from 6-7 months ago. Arsenal won't win the league. No chance. So, you know, I'm not a big fan of his because he's one of these guys that is very up on his high horse, wants to be proved right all the time, very opinionated. Like I say, he does speak sense sometimes and, you know, he does give us praise, I think, when we are due it. But I think he's very selfish in the sense that he wants to be proved right first and foremost. So, yeah, he's the one that I've got a problem with. But God knows what rival fans must think of someone like Ian Wright, who doesn't hide his bias in any way, shape or form. So that's what you're going to get of ex-players. Here's what it is.
Okay. Changing it slightly, I've seen a little bit of this on social media. Thank you for your question, Jack. Jack Burgess says, Ramsdale's becoming a problem at fault every game at the moment. Interesting, boys. FK, what do you think about that?
No, I think Ramsdell is an outstanding talent, and I think he's going to be number one for a long time at Arsenal. I love everything that he's doing. I do think sometimes he can switch off concentration lapses where he needs a big save early on in the game to really sort of wake himself up and get the adrenaline pumping. I think Jack makes a very salient point in that there seems to be a fault in him, but I think that's more because Saliba's not in the team. I think his absence has just caused a bit of nervousness across the back four. Gabriel hasn't looked himself. Ben White hasn't looked himself. Thomas Partey has had to drop so deep to try and sort of make up for that. And of course, you know, when you're a goalkeeper, if you're a bit shaky about your centre-backs, your decision-making goes out the window and you might panic a bit. And when the pressure gets to you at this stage of the season, maybe that's what's happening. But now for me, I mean, again, respectfully to Jack, great question, but I think Rambo's the main man, and I'm delighted that he's staying for the long term, for the foreseeable. I think he's only going to get better with age. He's still very young, 25. He's not going to peak until, you know, not peak for another 5-7 years. So we've got a lot of good goalkeeping to come from Aaron.
I love him. I wouldn't swap him at all. He reminds me of Bruce Grobbelaar, if anyone remembers him. He was like mad things, but amazing goalkeeper. So Patrick Colson, James, says now it's time to give Turner a couple of games. So we're relating to the Ramsdale question. Do you agree or not?
Nah, not for me. Sorry. I would just keep playing Ramsdale. I know he's got a mistake in him, and I know we've got Turner here to you know, be the backup, and he's not playing a lot of football this season and maybe he deserves it, but Ramsdale is my number one. I want him to play 38 out of 38 games this season. Don't think there's any shame in that. Turner's going to have opportunities next season. We're going to be fighting on multiple fronts. So, for me, Ramsdale stays in goal.
Chris, anything to add?
I don't think Ramsdale was a problem away at Newcastle just last weekend. Yeah. And I don't think he did anything wrong at Chelsea. These things happen. And when you're a young goalkeeper, you're going to make mistakes. Yeah, as FK said, he switches off. But everyone switches off. We're human beings. So keep him in. No problems with him whatsoever. Goalkeepers union, being a former goalkeeper myself, I got no problem with him.
No, nor have I. Carl Stark question. Has Reece Nelson done enough to earn a new contract? FK?
If you take out the moment against Bournemouth, which was amazing, like one of the best days of all of our recent Arsenal supporting years, right? If you take that moment out, that single moment, which was just immense joy, I'm not sure, Amanda. So maybe that might surprise a lot of people watching. I think Reece Nelson is a talented boy. I think he has a ceiling. But for whatever reason, over the years, he's just not had a chance to really excel and have a run of games in the team. And I wonder if that's because of application or intensity in training, or just because there are better players ahead of him in the pecking order. I think he has a role in the squad, but I don't know if young Reece wants to just be restricted to 4 or 5 appearances a season at a club like Arsenal. I think he could go to for example, and I mean this respectfully, a West Ham, an Aston Villa, and Everton, and actually get regular game time, which is probably what he wants and what he needs. I do think he's a talented boy, but I just think where Arsenal want to go, Amanda, I'm not sure Reece Nelson is going to get close to the starting 11, especially if we go out and get another top wide player this summer. So no for me. I'm sorry. Sorry if that offends anyone.
Chris?
No. Do you know what? When you are looking at trying to challenge Man City, you've basically got to be ruthless, and you need to essentially look at certain players that are in the squad at the moment and say, are you the type of players that if your name is on the team sheet first thing, as a football fan, as an Arsenal fan, I'm going, no problem with that. So for a lot, I mean, Trossard didn't do well, but if Trossard would have come in for a Saka or a Martinelli, I think most of us would have been like, no, do you know what? He's playing well, so that's fine. If Tomiyasu comes in, you think, well, when he's fit, you think to yourself, well, do you know what? That's not a massive downgrade. And that's the sort of thing that we need to look at now. And I've had too many people, and me myself, have felt that when Nelson has come on, I'm often thinking, he's had his one moment. It feels like that's probably his one moment. So for me, no, we've got to be ruthless with some of these players, and we've got to say, go and have a good career somewhere else, because we're trying to win a league. And that means we're going to need 22 to 24 players who are elite.
Anything to add to that, Captain?
It would be the same for me. I love Reece and I wish him every success in the world. But it's not just being ruthless with Reece as well, you've got to consider this is a guy that has been plagued with injuries in his Arsenal career, and he had them at Feyenoord last season. So for me, I think from a footballing point of view, it's just time to move on. And he's 23 years old, and if he can get a good move to a club like a Villa, like a, you know, a Brighton, I really hope he goes there. He plays as much football as he possibly can do, and he really lives up to the hype that we were hoping for him. But if we're being real, he's been surpassed by Saka. We've got Trossard in the team now. We're looking at signing someone like Diaby potentially in the summer window. I just don't see a future for him. I wish that goal against Bournemouth could have meant something. I wish it has. But I just worried that, you know, we spoke earlier about players we want to see in these next two games. I think it'd be so typical if he played those next two games, did really well, scored a couple of goals, signed him up to a 4 or 5 year deal. Then he did his ACL in the first game of next season. I that would just be so Arsenal. So for me, yeah, I think, Chris, you've hit the nail bang on the head. Got to be ruthless. And as much as we love these Hale graduates, just got to cut ties, unfortunately.
Okay. We'll do one more question, then we will sign out and let FK go. Simon Lester, friend of the show. Brighton targeted Ødegaard and marked him out of the game. Without him, we struggled to create virtually anything. Do you agree we need a plan B? Chris?
We absolutely need a plan B, but I don't think it always necessarily needs to be Ødegaard. I think just if you think about what we did last night or yesterday, when we were just hitting long balls towards essentially dunk because Gabriel Jesus couldn't make it there, we need an option to be able to say, do you know what? We're going to go long today because that's what the tactics demand. And we don't have that option at the moment. So I think that's a plan. That's one part of a plan B. I think you can look at, okay, so do we then have the ability to flip into a double pivot if we need to sit and protect in front of the back four? That's another option as a plan, but it's different types of, in the Swiss Army knife of, you know, tactics and formations, it's being able to have deployed different approaches. And I think that doesn't just mean one in for one out. So let's get an Ødegaard replacement who can do the same thing. It's somebody who can do something slightly different, albeit in different positions. Maybe we need a different type of Saka type player. So somebody who can play on that right side. Maybe it is a Gabriel Jesus that plays on the right side. And then you put somebody up front.
Boys, have you got anything to add to that?
Sorry, what was the question? Go on, completely lost it.
About Ødegaard, and do we need a plan B?
I don't think it was just Ødegaard yesterday. They just dominated the entire midfield. You know, Jorginho was completely phased out of the game. Xhaka was barely in the game. It wasn't just an Ødegaard thing. They bossed our midfield. McAllister was sensational. I tell you what, there's a lot of talk about Caicedo, but he is unbelievable. I think he could play anywhere in the midfield. I rate the guy so highly. He was fantastic. But in terms of a plan B, I think we tried to go to one yesterday when we put Trossard in the Xhaka role. I don't think it's a good plan B. And I thought all the substitutions he made yesterday were very erratic. But we need a different option. And I do think that's, the more I think about it, the more I would like a different player to Gabriel Jesus, like an Edin Dzeko type player. And Vlahovic is the guy that's on everyone's lips at the minute. But I just think we need a completely different profile, because if we're going to play, or at least attempt to play the way we did yesterday with the balls into the centre forwards, no point playing Gabby Jesus. And I think when Saka is, you know, in need of a rest or potentially injured, God forbid, we can play Jesus on the right, big centre forward in the middle, Martinelli or Trossard on the left. Gives us lots of options. So I think that would be a sensible move for Arsenal to explore this summer.
1 year deal for Olivier Giroud.
Who? I wouldn't say no.
I would. Thank you.
I would. I wanted to kill him at certain stages. Amanda, can I just come in on that just very quickly? I know you're over time, but for me, Simon, great question. Yes, there are a couple of things that we can do in terms of just changing our game plan, and that is conceding fewer goals. You know, we've conceded 42 goals this season, but if, from an offensive perspective, I'd like to see us more effective at set pieces. You know, it just feels like we don't score from as many corners and free kicks as we used to, and I'd like to see a bit more variety in play. I think Ødegaard's been outstanding. The one big thing for me is physicality in midfield. We talked about Xhaka, talked about Jorginho, for as good as they are on the ball and for all the qualities they bring as leaders and experienced men in the team, we couldn't half do with some physicality, some dynamism, some athleticism in that midfield, whether it's Declan Rice or Moises Caicedo. You know, those are definitely the right sort of profiles. because we need to not only just control possession of the ball, but we need to control the game. So physically imposing ourselves on the midfield. Cookie said it, Brighton bossed that midfield yesterday on Sunday. And had we have had either of those two personnel, would have made a massive, massive difference. And Thomas Partey's got to step up. What's happened to him? He's just fallen asleep the last few weeks. Come sort yourself out. You're playing for Arsenal Football Club. You're one of the best midfielders in the world. So if we could have a fit Partey and a, dare I say it, a Rice and a Caicedo, I mean, Arsenal are flying next year.
Oh, absolutely. And what a nice way to end it. A little bit of positivity. So, boys, I'm prepared to predict now, because for the last few matches I've been too scared to. I think we're going to beat Nottingham Forest, and it is Saturday tea time. Sorry, dinner time, not Sunday. I think we're going to beat them 2-1. FK, what's your prediction for Sunday?
For Saturday, I think
Saturday,
tea time.
Isn't it again?
I'll go positive. I think it'll be a score draw. But I do fancy Forest to cause us some big problems. And depending on who Arteta picks, I just think the heads will be gone as well. It's going to be a difficult few days for this young team and for the gaffer. But I think we'll all be back for Wolves, and it'll be a glorious sunny day. And it'll be a great, great sort of day to celebrate everything that we've had this season, because there's been some extraordinary moments and memories, you know. So yeah, Forest a tough one. Wolves is my home banker.
Right. So draw for you. Chris.
Yeah, 1-1 score draw. Just think, I think the heads gone comment is probably for me the most accurate one, because you can tell yourself time and time again, we're still in it. But those players will go into that match knowing, well, unless we win here today, it's not really going to make a lot of difference, because City will beat Chelsea on the Sunday, and that's the title wrapped up. So,
young captain,
I'm going to go 2-2. I think it'll be a really good game, you know. I think there's going to be goals. I think it's going to be entertaining, really good for the neutral. But exactly like you said, Chris, they're going to know even if they win that it doesn't really account for much. But that doesn't mean they shouldn't be professional. But I just think Forest have got so much to play for, whereas we don't at this moment in time. So, yeah, I'm expecting goals. I'm expecting in the draw. And let's not forget, Forest is a really tough place to go. Like, they've got a really good home record this season. And our away form there, although they've not been in the Premier League, is dreadful. Our last two results there, I think we've lost them both. So it's not a happy hunting ground for us. And yeah, I don't think it's going to be easy in the slightest on Saturday. But, you know, at least we can watch you about the pressure.
Yeah, exactly. The pressure's off. I'm the only one going for a win. I'm quite surprised. Okay. Everybody, we have gone way over. We really need to say a big thank you to all of you in the chat room that stayed with us. I'm so sorry we didn't get through all your questions. We might do a Q&A just with your questions during the summer, because you do come up with some good ones and we don't get round to all of them. But FK, thank you for being the most, the loveliest and fantastic guest. It's gone so quick. I could listen to you for ages, and people in the chat room have saying such lovely things. I'm so pleased you enjoy the pod, and our lovely FK as well. Tell everyone where they can find you if they don't know who you are.
Yeah, if you want to, very kind words, Amanda, thank you. And thanks to all the members in the chat. I've been watching the chat more intently than I do when I'm normally hosting. So really, really nice and really kind to not get bantered off every now and again. So I'm on Twitter, F Carnage, as you can see on screen. And my YouTube channel is Latte Firm, where we also do post-match phone-ins on match days, because I just love the Arsenal. So thank you so much for having me on.
You must come on again, FK. You're definitely invited back.
I've really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it, sincerely.
Oh, thank you so much. So that's it, really. Chris, any last words, and James, to the people in the chat room, or any words of wisdom to cheer people up?
Nope. Just keep on being Arsenal. Keep supporting the club. We've had a great season. It's not over yet, but let's just see this out till the summer, and then start getting excited for next season.
Yeah, and I'll just echo that. Don't be too downbeat whatsoever, because although it feels like this was the only possible season in which we could do it, I mean, we're living in the moment. We're going to be here next season, the season after that, the season after that. We've got one of the youngest teams in the league. Come on, we're not going anywhere.
Absolutely. Thanks to everybody. Thank you, guys and girls, for joining us. Remember, we have the most incredible season. We will be back next Monday night, and then the Monday after to do our final pod of this season. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate. Please like, please subscribe. Everyone on audio, I hope you've enjoyed this. And remember, it is always Arsenal. It's always Arsenal.
Social Podcast Network.